Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Welcome, welcome, welcome in to the Tuesday edition of Sports Talk here on WWL. Christian Garrick with the day off. I'm Mark Menard alongside Bobby Hebert, and we have a big show for you, even in the resident Marine's absence. We got a lot to talk about today. Let's run down the guest list. First of all, coming up in just about 20 minutes at 4:30, an all-time great joining the show, former Buffalo Bills Super Bowl quarterback Jim Kelly is going to step into the radio huddle. We're going to talk to Jim about the possible resurrection of the USFL. He played a big part in the USFL, as did the Cajun Cannon. And we're going to have some USFL memories, some reminiscing, some nostalgia, and also we'll talk about whether or not that concept remains viable today and whether or not they can get it back off the ground. So Jim Kelly joining us at 4:30 today. At 5:20, we'll talk with Jimmy Patsos, Odyssey NBA insider, to talk a little bit about the NBA playoffs, what's still to come, the Phoenix Suns, and maybe their odds improved in Vegas in terms of the Phoenix Suns championship odds. We'll talk to Jimmy about that. The 6 o'clock hour, the entire hour, we get to welcome in NFL and college scouting guru Mike Dettillier, one of our friends here. Always happy to help us out. We're going to get to talk to him a little bit about what's left in free agency, what's to come in the offseason here with all these training activities, who's practicing, who's not practicing, who's in the weight room, who's in the classroom, and what to look for as the season kind of starts to get tentatively underway when the preseason rolls around in August. We'll talk to Mike about all things football. And at 7:20, Ollie Cosell of thebirdrights.com. He's going to join us to talk about the Pelicans offseason, free agency, what we can expect, if there's any new news coming out of Pelicans camp about Lonzo Ball, about Josh Hart. There's rumors out there about both. There's rumors out there about all sorts of things. We will talk to Ollie Cosell tonight at 7:20. You can join the radio huddle on the Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line, 504-260-1870. That's 504-260-1870. And now I'm going to welcome in the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert. And this is the first time we get to talk to you since LSU got knocked out of the NCAA Super Regional play by Tennessee. And so goes LSU, so goes their skipper, Paul Maneri, heading into retirement. So, Bobby, what is your take on the legacy of Paul Maneri in Baton Rouge?
Well, the coach they're getting ready to hire, Coach Bianco, which I think has done an outstanding job for the Ole Miss program. But, you know, much is given, much is required. You look at the great facilities they have at Ole Miss, the great facilities they have at LSU, but it's all about going to Omaha. Look at Coach Bianco. Two decades plus, and he's been to Omaha one time, but he's an LSU Tiger. A great human being, just like Paul Maneri. So, you know what? It's hard to appreciate individuals, and you don't realize what you had in the process until they're gone. I look at Coach Maneri's career. You know, I wasn't able to really elaborate on this. After 39 years of college baseball coaching, 15 seasons at LSU, during his tenure, LSU won the 2009 national championship. He said, "Well, he should have won more than that," but he still reached the five college World Series, where Coach Bianco has reached one. No, that's the only negative in Coach Bianco, because I think what he's done for Ole Miss has been remarkable. But everybody wants to go to the College World Series. It's just the day and age we live in. Now, Coach Maderi's last appearance coming in 2017. But you look at his Hall of Fame career, won 1,505 games. That speaks volumes right now, right there. And then even how he handled the team. They were 1-8 in the SEC, and the program's worst league start since 1969. But then you look how they handled adversity. Now, the Tigers won four straight elimination games at the Eugene Regional to come within 2 wins of the College World Series. But I think Tennessee's pretty damn good. I'd be shocked. I don't know. Maybe you could say Virginia can handle adversity. You know, when you look at what's going to come about there, because it is one game when you're kicking off, you know, in Omaha for the College World Series. But Tennessee's the number 3 overall seed in the NCAA tournament. So when I look at Tennessee, you don't think they're chomping at the bit? They have not reached the College World Series. This is the first time since 2005. And just the way this Tennessee Vols team is structured, what, 48 wins, their most in 2 decades, 20-10 conference record, Tennessee's first 20-win season in SEC, Mark, since so winning 22 games back in 1995. Mark, think about that. Since 1995. So it's always about what have you done for me lately. But I think we'll appreciate Coach Maderi more, you know, once he's gone. And high expectations for LSU, though, in the program. It's not only, I think, even more than Ole Miss. If Coach Bianco, if he ends up coming to LSU, it looks like that could happen within, I'd say, 48 hours. Is that, hey, you just can't have a winning program. And you just can't be hosting regionals. It has to be about hosting super regionals, then going on to Omaha. So a lot of pressure comes with the gig for the LSU Tigers, but he's one of LSU's own. He's a homegrown individual. We all know about his son and everything. But listen, I think Ole Miss fans, they so ticked off that they got spanked. They got spanked by the Arizona Wildcats in Tucson. Now, they won the second game because three games Arizona won 2 out of 3. None of the games were close. Ole Miss got shellacked the first game. You could say they shellacked the Wildcats in the second game, but then they got whooped in that final game to go to Omaha.
Bobby, I don't know if there's any shame in losing to Arizona. Did you take a look at the run totals for the Wildcats through the playoffs here? Let me just run these down.
Well,
for you
the
real
thing
quick.
Is, Mark, we're not familiar with them. It's like we don't know about Stanford. We don't know about you know, Arizona.
Arizona in the regionals scored 12 runs. Then they won 4-0, and then they 5-2, and then after that, in the super regional play, they put up. Let's see, where is it here? They put up 9 runs and 16 runs against Ole Miss. So the Wildcats are teeing off at the plate right now.
Well, and the thing is, Arizona State, you know, the Sun Devils, the Wildcats, they are traditional baseball programs. Stanford has bounced back. If you look at traditionally in the Pac-12, I mean, what have you done for me lately? And then in history, you'd have to say USC and Arizona State baseball. That's going back to the 60s and 70s when they were dominant pre-Skip Bertman. And then if you look at the Arizona Wildcats and the Oregon State Beavers. So, for instance, you know, we went up to Eugene to play at Oregon. If I can recall, I want to say Arizona won the Pac-12. So they're not chopped liver. I mean, the bottom line is when you look at Arizona, where they're at, I think well-deserved. And so, I mean, you know, I kind of like where Vanderbilt's at. You know, Vanderbilt could be peaking at the right time, going into Super Regional. I thought if you look at SEC representative, and I look for a pitching staff. I look at Mississippi State. They were hitting the ball. Now they're going to go against the Texas Longhorns. I think that's going to be a challenge for them. But I'm more intrigued what's going to happen Arizona against Vanderbilt. That's going to, I think, say a lot. And I told Christian this. Not that I know anything about baseball. I just read. He He said, watch out for North Carolina State. And I told Christian, I go, if I got a dark horse, North Carolina State could beat Arkansas. You think that's blasphemy, considering what Arkansas has done, won every series in the SEC, but didn't North Carolina State look like they belong? And they're moving on. So I'm going to be intrigued and to see what happens in the College World Series. But the one, if you want to talk about an underdog, and it's like peaking at the right time and you give up hope and they end up beating Dallas Baptist, the Virginia Cavaliers. If you look at Virginia, they faced off are just like you thought they're going to be eliminated six times in eight NCAA tournament games. They end up beating Dallas Baptist 5-2 on Monday, the Grand Slam to go on to the College World Series. But I'd be Virginia can't upset Tennessee, but I think Tennessee's better, if that makes sense. Virginia's 35-25, but they're in the hunt. They're in the College World Series, and Tennessee thinks they're having a special season right now. So I'll be intrigued, even though LSU's not involved in the College World Series, considering the teams that are playing and just being able to witness, can you peak at the right time? And I'll give more hope, if you're an SEC fan, more hope in Vanderbilt than Mississippi State.
Bobby, before we get to the break, let's get to the Oakwood Heart Jewelers talk and text line. John from Metairie wants to talk about the legacy of Paul Mainieri in the Red Stick. John, you're on with Bobby Hebert on Sports Talk.
Hey, Bobby, how you doing?
Hey, John, what you got, man?
Oh, look, I know you're honest, and I know you're an up-forward guy. Yesterday, I called in and I talked to Christian. And Christian kept trying to worm all around my conversation. He had no answers for me every time I did it. I was speaking to him. And then he had the nerve, instead of saying, you know, thank you for the call or whatever, he goes to Paul Mainieri crying when he couldn't answer the questions no more on the podium.
But John, Christian loves Paul Mainieri.
No, he does.
Hey, listen. I like Paul Mainieri. Christian loves him.
I love him, too. I like Paul Mainieri. Paul Mainieri screwed the game up, period. And he couldn't understand that Hilliard is throwing good in that game on Saturday, and then Paul puts in these freshmen after Hilliard's shutting them down. He's going to put in the freshmen. He knows the freshmen were going to get roped.
Well, he was thinking maybe, I think Coach Mainieri was thinking Coleman could build on the success that he had at the Oregon Regional, and that didn't happen. Now, he got better after he continued to pitch. But Hilliard was doing awesome. Listen, I'm watching the game. I'm at Steak Knife right there in Harrison, and we're all watching the game. And I told my wife and my good friend Jeff Wooten, we're all watching this game. And when I witnessed it, when it was going in a different direction, I can tell you the storyline right now. Why in the hell did Coach Mainieri take out Hilliard? I knew that would be the number one thing. Consider, you know, like how many pitches he's pitched. I kind of take the approach, you leave him in there until he gives up maybe a hit or two. And then you hopefully, whoever you put in there can rebound and handle that adversity. But the different approach to coach. I mean, I don't know half of what Coach Mainieri would know. But Hilliard was very confident. And you look at number of pitches you've thrown in the past and going forward, that sometimes you just have to, within your gut, you just have to have that gut feeling, and you roll the dice. It could be positive or negative. Obviously, that was negative for LSU.
But, Bobby, here's the thing. Okay, I agree with you. Let's assume that you take that assumption. If you're going to take Hilliard out, Hilliard's got the lead. You got the momentum. He's shutting these guys down. But let's say he says, okay, I'm trying to protect Hilliard's arm. Aren't you going to go with Fontenot and try and close the game? But the guy pitched seven innings in a super regional before and try and win game one. And then if it gets worse than that in game two, he's got his eighth on the mound. Everybody's saying, oh, he's struggling. The guy gave up three hits in three innings. That happened to be two home runs. It's time to make that play. They got two outs. He's pitching from the stretch. You're going to put a bunch of freshmen in that got roped in the night before? Why wouldn't you come in with Fontenot? He screwed up. He took all LSU's chance away from them. Thompson didn't help with all the errors. But I'll tell you what, I thought Mainieri, that was the worst job I've ever seen Mainieri do. That's
well, the one thing you talk about, Thompson, if you're an LSU shortstop, you can get spoiled, Alex Bregman and everything. But isn't that like, I don't know, like a Thompson coming from California? I mean, the dude couldn't hit, and then he makes errors at shortstop. So I don't know if that was a wise choice to recruit. You can look the way he was ranked coming out of high school, you know, going forward. But the one thing, I don't know, bottom line is Tennessee hits home runs. They had four, walk-off home runs, including one in a game two against LSU. That's way back in March. And the bottom line is the Vols can hit home runs, and they did that against the Tigers.
Well, let me ask you this. Would you have taken out your ace and put in a bunch of freshmen, or would you have went with Fontenot? And, or just let your ace in and win and lose on your ace?
Well, I think he kind of looked at with Fontenot, if you're going to truly win the series and not just win a game, but if you're going to win two out of three, you need him to be the closer. So I could see in that regard Coach Mineri taking that approach. But simply based on it's all hindsight now that I would not have taken out Hilliard considering how well he was pitching.
I don't think Thompson's going to be there next year because if you notice throughout the whole season, that kid throws in the dirt every time. Morgan sees him at first base almost every single time he makes a throw over there.
Well, okay, John, you might agree with this. This season – might have been you were just hoping when a ground ball would get hit. Well, I don't think just getting out. I think we could turn a double play. How about just getting out?
Yeah, I agree.
Just getting out. We can't turn a double play. And then look at poor Cranford from Zachary right there in LSU's backyard. I mean, it's almost like Thompson and Cranford. I mean, it's a big moment, big stage with LSU. Listen, the transfer portal, you might have to just transfer, go somewhere else. You could still have success, but too much high expectations for LSU, and that's what I was worried about going into Tennessee is that even though we got out of the Oregon Regional, still too many errors. I mean, I look at other teams. I mean, it looks like they're flawless in the field. When they got a chance to make a double play, they make it. Or when they have a chance to throw it out, yeah, exactly. If you look at the first baseman, he was unbelievable bailing him out.
He was. He bailed him out every single time. Well, look, I appreciate your honesty. I really do. That's why I wanted to talk to you. I think Christian is a worm for what he did, though. He didn't even come back to the conversation. He put Ben McDonald on, and Ben McDonald agreed exactly, almost verbatim, for what I said. And Christian just sit there, well, you know, he'll get 147 pitches. He was going to defend Mineri till he died. And I'm like, listen to this guy. He makes no sense.
Well, and John, we both love, we acknowledge what Coach Mineri has done as the LSU head guy. I mean, come on, you do this over a dozen years. I mean, it's a great accomplishment what he's done throughout his career. But to me, I would have stuck with Hilliard. I mean, it's not like if you look at pitches across college baseball, God, I can't think of his name now, the closer for Arkansas. Look how he is utilized untraditionally. And now you might say, well, his arm is different. You might be trying to protect the players. But I would have waited almost if Hilliard gives up a hit or he's walking people or maybe even a couple of hits, and then you go with Coleman after that.
Bobby, that's what I thought the whole time, too. And everybody I talked to said the same thing. Christian just – he didn't want to hear it, man. He didn't want to hear it at all.
Well, because Christian does coach baseball, and sometimes you can go by a book and you can go by your gut feeling, and sometimes your gut feeling is wrong just the way things are playing itself out.
Yeah, I've coached baseball all my life, and I've just never seen – I thought that was two horrible decisions by Mineri.
Well, the thing is, John, you know what I'm saying? It's no excuse, though. Listen. You could say it's close games, hard-fought games that we lost. Who's better, Tennessee or LSU?
Tennessee.
They won five games. You know, it's the same thing when LSU lost the national championship, if I can recall, to Florida. LSU, Florida won five, LSU won one. So you might say, now you can get lucky and you win the game that counts, the national championship, but Florida was better. They won 5-1. Tennessee won 5-0. They were just better. So I'm not trying to make excuses in that regard. So,
No, but Bobby, you see what I'm saying. If he leaves Hilliard in, I think we got a chance. We had to leave. If he leaves the eighth in, I think we had a chance. And I don't know. And again, it would have been a tough task no matter what. But I still think at least we'd have had a chance of both of them. Come in with Fontenot. Try and win a game. Then get that third game and see what happens. You never know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
He didn't even try that. That's what frustrated me.
Well,
but anyway, I'll take
All right, John. Really thanks for the call. I'll be surprised if Tennessee doesn't have a chance. I like Vanderbilt's chance better because they're pitching and where they're at when you got dominant major league pitching. And considering you look at their super regional, they were going to Omaha before the tournament even really started, considering how dominant they were. So, but I look at Tennessee, everyone expects them to beat Virginia. But look at Virginia, the adversity they face, and it seems like they come out on top.
Bobby, you know what's one of the quirks of the tournament? It's what happens when the number one seed gets knocked out before Omaha. Now you have the two highest seeds left in the tournament facing off in the second round because you're going to have Tennessee on a collision course with Texas in that bracket because Texas is the two seed, Tennessee is the three seed, and that's going to be a second-round matchup if they both advance. And meanwhile, Vanderbilt on the other side gets either NC State or I forget who's matching up with NC State.
But Stanford.
Stanford, yeah. They get either NC State or Stanford. And that's going to be, you know, so in the second round, you get Tennessee and Texas possibly if they both make it out of that first game. And you're going to get that as a second-round matchup and not something at the end of the College World Series.
Well, you look at Vanderbilt, like 45-15 program. You look at Vanderbilt 50-17. You look at Mississippi State 41-16. Now we're not familiar with them. Why wouldn't you put Arizona and Stanford on that level? You might say, "Oh, well, the competition." I don't know. They got two teams out of the Pac-12 going to Omaha. Stanford's 38-15. Arizona 45-22. So,
Bobby, we were talking about this yesterday. If you take a look at the SEC, you know they went into the playoffs basically with nine teams. And they got three to Omaha after Mississippi State punched their ticket last night. So there's three from the SEC, but there's two from the Pac-12, and there's two from the ACC with Virginia and NC State. So is the SEC really that dominant in terms of the conferences, or is it getting closer and closer to that gap being closed?
Well, I think the SEC is still dominant, but you know that's why they play the game. You get hot at the right time. If I had a dark horse right now, I would say more NC State. Now watch. I'll say that, and they'll lose to Stanford. That's why I'm intrigued what's going to happen now that Arkansas's out.
He's Bobby Hebert. I'm Mark Menard. So much more sports talk coming up, so stay with us. This is WWL. Welcome back into Sports Talk. Mark Menard and Bobby Hebert with you on a Tuesday afternoon here. Getting a little warm outside, Bobby. The summer is definitely here.
So what, is it August? is this the beginning of August?
We were hitting the hundreds last week, and it was getting while I was off, and it was definitely starting to feel like July and August a little bit earlier than usual.
Well, I know I need to lose a few more pounds, but I'm just walking from my car to here, and I'm sweating my behind off. I'm like, what?
You're going to get that water weight off, that's for sure.
Yeah, no, all of a sudden I'm sweating, and I'm just walking. How can you sweat and you're walking? I mean, I guess in the heat index is
Look,
up.
Look, you've been here a long time just like I have. You know that, you know, once that heat hits in the summer, you can take a shower, be fresh out the shower, and as soon as you walk outside, that humidity just slaps you in the face and says, that was useless.
Well, at least we have water. We're going to have too much water, but you look out west, they don't have enough water. I mean, so what's an ideal place to live? I don't know, in the mountains, the Appalachian Mountains?
Everybody's got problems.
It could be cold in the winter, but is it that cold and all? You just look out west of California, they're going to worry about fires again, and then they hit in you look at Palm Springs and all, like 118 degrees. Oh, it's a dry heat. I don't know, 118 is 118. It's still freaking hot. I ever told you that game I played?
My shoes are still melting, but it's a dry heat.
I ever told you a game I played in the USFL? Because we're going to talk to Jim Kelly. He's going to be on tomorrow. And We played a game against the Arizona Wranglers in Phoenix, and it was about June 18th, 19th, and all of a sudden, it was like, well, it's not that hot. I'm like, what? Okay, at kickoff, it was like 112, okay?
That's pretty warm.
And we're playing at night. They go, yeah, but it's going to cool off to 104. I swear, you ever open up you ever open up like your oven is kind of almost like dry, that heat you just feel in your face? Well, it was one of those deals. So to me, hot is hot. Humidity is worse because you can dehydrate and all that. Because when you're in the desert and it's so hot, your sweat, it just evaporates.
What is the field like to play on when it's that hot?
If you better be on a grass field because I was in a game. George Allen was the coach of the Chicago Blitz. We were playing the Michigan Panthers to win the division. And we had a bunch of young players. They had a bunch of old players. And on the field, on AstroTurf Field, at Old Soldier Field in Chicago, it was like 120. Okay?
Okay.
And it was hot. It was so hot, and everybody's hydrating and all that. It was so hot that, you know, you got, you know, the EMS and, you know, they're there to be there in case someone's injured or hurt. And three cheerleaders were cheering, and they just fell out. So they just doing their routine, and they fell out, so they had to bring them in. And we ended up winning that game because I think we had younger players. You know, I never forget when we beat that George Allen team. And that was in 83, just dealing with the heat. No, football is a fall, spring, a fall, winter sport. But I think we love football year-round. So there's different climates, though, you can play in the spring and the summer. For instance, we played in the Super Bowl of the USFL and the championship at Mile High Stadium in Denver in July. It was awesome. You know, it felt the weather was nice. Now, the air was a little thin. You know, you had to, you know.
Well, and don't forget.
But we practiced there the whole week, so you got acclimated to it.
Football is a sport where you're carrying a lot of gear. And so that's a lot harder to do when it's 110 degrees.
Yeah, so, but listen, you get paid. You're getting paid well. You're getting paid the big bucks. You just got to, you know, suck it up. So no one's going to feel sorry for you. But right now, Sean Payton would not have the team outside. Let's say we could witness the mandatory mini camp practices. Mm-hmm. Sean Payton would not have them outside. He would have them in the indoor facility, which is awesome. And I welcome it. I like to cover the team and watch practice inside versus I'm outside just watching practice and I feel like I got to go change my shirt before they have a press conference.
Well, and we've heard him talk about this from, you know, back in the days when they were at the Millsaps campus in Mississippi and it was so hot for training camp. And Sean said, you know, he doesn't want guys out there just worry about surviving. He wants guys that are learning the playbook and learning what they got to do.
Yeah, because then it gets counterproductive. Instead of just trying to survive practice, you're actually getting better in practice.
Yeah, so, there's a fine line there, obviously.
No, does it make you mentally tougher if you're dealing with the heat? That's an old-school mentality. But, look, ideal conditions. I think at the Greenbrier, it was awesome. You know, you have a morning practice, it's in the 60s. And I don't know, we didn't win jack. We were a 500 team until we came back here on airline drive.
Well, look, they've been looking for ways to tweak this and make it better ever since the tragedy in Minnesota with the Vikings player who died a heat stroke
was
during
it
training
Corey
camp.
Stringer, was it?
Corey Stringer, yeah. And so we've seen, you know, slight changes and modifications happening all throughout, you know, the years since that happened. And they're always kind of trying to find the perfect formula. And I think the Saints actually, you know, with the camp here in Metairie, I think that they've kind of perfected that formula.
Yeah, without a doubt. If it's too hot or lightning, we go inside, and then you might have one tough practice in the heat, and the fans get to be close to the team. So, listen, I love us having practice, you know, locally for the fan base, but come on, how can the players not survive? They train year-round, and they don't even do two-a-days no more. 2 days are a dinosaur. They do one practice. I mean, you could do anything for 3 hours. Come on. Suck it up.
He's Bobby Hebert. I'm Mark Menard. More sports talk coming up on WWL. Mark Menard for Christian Garrick along with Bobby Hebert on Sports Talk. And Bobby, we're going to put a button in the LSU baseball coaching search topic for now. But just, you know, real quick, let's get your final thoughts on the reports today that surfaced that maybe Mike Bianco is the guy who has taken the lead in the chase for the LSU baseball coaching job. Do you like Mike Bianco as like
yes.
your top guy, or is there somebody out there you'd like better?
No, I like him because you know, he's homegrown. We all know what he means to LSU, even though he's been at Ole Miss over two decades. And Ole Miss fans might say good riddance. You know, we gave him whatever he wanted for the facility-wise and all that, and only went to the Omaha one time. You know, when you look at Godwin, he's the other one in contention from East Carolina. But, I mean, he currently makes $395,000. I think his contract would take him to like $425,000 in 2024. So, but money's not going to be an issue for LSU. But I think when you look at Skip Bertman, you look at Paul Maneri and Bianco, I think when they're involved and that they're going to be on that Bianco bandwagon to get it done. Now, the one to me, the hottest coach, and he's going to the College World Series, and he's very adamant how he coaches as the young Tennessee coach, Tony Vitello. Looking at him, I'll say Mark, you know, he only right now, I think he's getting ready for a pay raise. He makes around $600,000, and probably I could see Tennessee definitely doubling his salary, particularly for sure if he has success in Omaha. But I would say Bianco right now.
What do you make of this text on the Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line that says Omaha is short for Ole Miss at home again?
I think that's a true statement.
Does that weigh into your Mike Bianco projection?
He would not even be a candidate if he didn't have the LSU ties. Does that make sense? I think he would stay at Ole Miss. The only thing I could see him staying at Ole Miss, I'm going to say one of his kids are like a senior in high school in Oxford, but you can keep the wife there and to take care, you know, the kid for 1 year till they graduate next year, and you come back to Baton Rouge. But I think that you know, the only reason why he would stay at Ole Miss is because that's where he's established himself. Anywhere that you there for a couple of decades, but a change of scenery is not necessarily bad. And I think the LSU ties with Coach Bianco would make sense, and I think that's what will happen probably within 48 hours.
Bobby Hebert, Mark Menard with you on Sports Talk, coming back right after this on WWL. All right, good people, today is your lucky day. Time to play the free cash contest. We want you to win $1,000. The code word this hour is SHADOW. That's SHADOW, SHADOW. Text SHADOW to 72881, 72881. Every weekday, every hour between 7 a.m. and 6 p.m., you get a chance to win $1,000 in our Odyssey National Cash Contest. That's $11,000 a day. Listen for the code word right before the top hour news. We'll play the free cash contest again tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. Good luck from all of us at WWL. Message and data rates may apply. Please do not text and drive. Three more hours of Sports Talk with Bobby Hebert and me, Mark Menard, filling in for Christian Garrick, coming up right after the news. Don't go anywhere. This is WWL.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.